This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is back. It's Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. We are sort of back to our normal digs. We're not in a hotel room. We're not... We're opening our Coke cans. Like, oh, yes. Ken opened it all over me. The bastard. The Coke just sprayed onto my nose.
That's not very nice to say about
son of a bitch. Anyways, everybody, we're not in a hotel room. We're not over the phone snowed into our homes. We're at our studio, and now we're covered in Diet Coke. But other than that, sort of back to normal. Lots to talk about this week. I guess we may as well start with the big trade between the Penguins and the Panthers. You got Nick Bjugstad and Jared McCann going to Pittsburgh. Florida gets Riley Sheehan, Derek Brassard, 2019 second-round pick, and two different fourth-rounders also in 2019. Right. So it's pretty apparent what's going on here. Pittsburgh is, they're trying to solve that third-line center problem, and they may have it with Bjugstad. They're taking on two young guys with term left on their deals, right, in Bjugstad and McCann. Right. And the Panthers evidently are trying to clean out. They got two UFAs coming in Brassard and Riley Sheehan. And presumably to pursue Bobrovsky and Panarin? I don't know. So let's just start with, what do you guys think of the trade for each team?
Well, on the surface, it's a bunch of bad players being traded for one another. Really, it is. I mean, Derek Brassard has not been very good this year at all. Riley Sheehan, in my opinion, is a dime a dozen guy. Doesn't give you near enough offense for the role that he plays. So, you look at it on the surface, and I would say that I think Pittsburgh got the better part of the deal. And I've had people say to me, oh, well, you know, they gave away all these draft picks and they can't, you know, restock their future. They don't care about that right now. They have Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby. They have them, you know, in, they've got maybe two or three more years left of like prime production from some of these guys, the Phil Kessels, the, you know, and they're going for it. And I don't think they care three years down the road if they're going to be finishing 32nd overall in the NHL. They'll finish 32nd overall, and then the next Sidney Crosby will come again, and they'll pick him first overall. I don't think they care one bit about the future. They are going for it now. They've got a window of a couple of years where they can maybe win one more cup, maybe two, and even that's going to be a tall order. And I think, you know, kudos to them for going for it. Bjugstad's been a guy who I think for over the course of his career has been a bit of an enigma. You look at him and you go, why doesn't he put up better numbers than he has? And he has had some decent offensive seasons. And I think, you know, coming into that Pittsburgh situation where he'll, you know, either be a third line center and not face, you know, a lot of difficult matchups, or he'll be able to, you know, play shotgun with either, you know, Malkin or Crosby, I think could bring out, you know, some good things in him.
Yeah. And, you know, Coach Mike Sullivan, after the game in Toronto on the weekend, I asked him what Bjugstad brings, and one of the things he said was versatility. Right. Obviously, Malkin missed that game due to injury, right. So Bjugstad was playing center, but as you said, he could very well be a winger. He did play wing in Florida at times. So for me, I'm totally with you on the logic of the trade for Pittsburgh. I just think that, like, they're already done. And I get it. If you have Crosby and Malkin, you've always got a chance. But it feels like that roster has just denigrated over the years to the point where, you know, like, if Matt Murray gets a cold, their playoffs are done.
Right.
And you're right. They do have to go to it. But I remember talking to a scout a couple of years ago who said, you know, eventually Sidney Crosby will not be a number one center in the NHL.
Right.
And you can't replace him. You know, like, I mean, maybe you, as you said, you get lucky and you get the number one pick overall, and that player happens to be incredible. But eventually the Penguins are going to have a reckoning. It just depends on when it is. And I would like to see them stop trading draft picks at this point, just because, like, what do their scouts even do these days, right?
Well,
like,
no, I feel first bad for them. Their last six first-rounders, they've picked one. Or last seven, they've picked two, and it was Derek Pouliot and Kasperi Kapanen. They traded those two. And the other five, they've traded away.
Yeah, you know what? I still like what they're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I mean, I think they owe it to Crosby and Malkin, because those guys have Sidney Crosby saved the Pittsburgh Penguins.
True.
You know, I mean, Mario Lemieux saved them before that, and they may need saving again someday. But you know what? Like, draft picks be damned. Like, a second and a third, like, those guys may never turn out to even come close to playing in the league. So, you know, I'm good. I'm down with what they're doing. Like, you know, worry about 3 years from now, 3 years from now. Yeah. It's worked out pretty well for this franchise doing it that way.
I agree. And I always use the analogy of the Seinfeld episode where Kramer pushes the gas tank way past the limit and they're just keep going until it breaks down. And we know what's coming. We saw Chicago and LA, what's happened. That will be Pittsburgh's fate eventually.
Yeah. Yep.
The only criticism I have of the trade is, was it enough? And I was excited for Pittsburgh's sake when I heard things like Pittsburgh was chasing Kevin Hayes to be their number three center, or maybe even a Matt Duchene. Those guys are rentals, of course, so at least with Bukestad, you're getting a guy who's under team control. But if Pittsburgh's really all in, might it have been worth it to just chase a bigger fish? Or maybe Pittsburgh does not have the assets to get a Kevin Hayes?
Yeah. I don't know. Who do you trade at this point if you're Pittsburgh? Like, you don't have a lot of picks, and I mean, the prospect cupboard is super bare. And I agree. I mean, it's for a good reason. When you win championships, it does not matter if you are in salary cap hell like the Blackhawks were for a while. It does not matter if you have zero prospects like Pittsburgh. The end goal is to win cups. Both those franchises did it, so it's all gravy from here.
And, you know, I mean, like you say, I mean, it would be tough for them to land a Matt Duchene or Kevin Hayes. And, you know, I mean, I think Jim Rutherford is looking at this and going, I don't want to be stuck after the trade deadline with nothing, because that could very well happen. Because we know that the Kevin Hayes, Matt Duchene, if Mark Stone goes on the market, you know, some of these guys, and Artemi Panarin, like, it's going to be a king's ransom for those guys.
Yes.
And the closer it gets to the deadline, the higher those prices are going to go. And Pittsburgh's just not going to be able to do it at some point. They're just not going to have the assets.
There's nobody left
to hang with a team that might have them. So then you're going, okay, well, now we're getting frozen out. Okay, now, Bukestad's already been traded.
Mm.
Okay, so now we get nothing. So I it's proactive. And, you know, I mean, I think Jim Rutherford is a damn good GM. Mm-hmm. And if he thinks that this is the right move, I mean, it isn't always the right move, but I'm gonna defer to the wily veteran on this one.
And do we think there's some validity to the theory that the Panthers are going to be loading up when free agency comes, chasing Sergei Bobrovsky and Artemi Panarin? And do you think they're trying to clear the deck in hopes of chasing both? Do you think there's logic to that?
I don't know what the hell they're doing otherwise. I have no clue what this team is doing, what identity they're trying to forge, what they're trying to do.
I never do.
Like, I have no clue what, you know, I mean, Dale Talon came back, and he should have been back. He should have never left. But I'm quite frankly, I'm baffled by this whole organization. Like, they should be way better than they are.
Yeah.
They should have been a better team than they are. And what they're going to do this year is they're going to do what they do every year. They suck for the first half of the season. And I guarantee you, in March and April, they'll lose like one game and they'll finish 5 points out of a playoff spot. And everybody will be saying, oh, okay, wait till next year.
Right.
I ain't buying it. I don't even know. I can't even begin to figure this enigma out that is the Florida Panthers.
Well, it's an organization that says, Jonathan Marchessault, you are a terrible hockey player. We cast you out. We expose you in the expansion draft.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't understand.
And there is talk that Brassard could get flipped to Columbus in a potential Bobrovsky deal that obviously Florida would want to lead to a contract with Bobrovsky long term. My question, of course, is what do you do with all the other goaltenders you already had.
Yeah.
But I'll let them figure that out later.
Yeah, they'll figure it out somehow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Moving over to the Carolina Hurricanes right now. And I thought the sort of post-game celebration equals fun in most people's eyes debate was over. But now we have them upping their game, if you will, with Duck Duck Goose. And then you have Elias Lindholm, former Hurricane, post-game, mocking the team. And that's kind of suggesting there's at least a certain part of hockey culture other than Brian Burke who doesn't like what they're doing. I personally, I'm still in the camp. I'm like, Duck Duck Goose, whatever you want. Red Rover, keep it going, boys. Love it. What about you guys? Have you changed your stance at all?
No, I'm where I was a couple of months ago when we talked about it. It's not particularly my cup of tea. But they don't care what I think. You know, they don't care what a 56-year-old guy thinks. I think they're trying for a new demographic. What I'd like to see, what I think would be interesting, is to see what the Carolina Hurricanes concession sales are like in the third period.
Uh-huh.
Because people are, when they're winning, people are sticking around for the end of the game.
Yeah.
For no other reason than to just watch what they're, what bag they're, what trick they're going to pull out of their bag this time. So it'd be interesting to see if there's a, like, if before there was a big drop off in that and now there's a certain, I don't know. But anyways, you know what? It's like I said, it's not my cup of tea. I'm not particularly fond of it. I don't really care. But it's not hurting anybody and they seem to have something going with it. So, you know, really, is anybody getting killed here? No, don't think so.
Yeah. I didn't particularly like the Duck Duck Goose, but it's, I just think that they've done a lot better. Like Brock McGinn with the Thor's hammer. I think that was like the high watermark other than, you know, the original. So I think they've done a lot of good ones. It does get into the realm and Justin Bourne put this out on Twitter that once you're playing Duck Duck Goose, you're basically saying we're not a playoff team. we're having fun here and that's great.
I love that we're having this sentence. Think about that sentence. I love that we're having that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I mean, I'm not against it. I think they're having a lot of fun and it's great for the fans. But I do see a little bit of we can do whatever because it doesn't really matter.
Well, and they're probably truth be told, they're probably running out of stuff to do.
There's also that.
You know what? I mean, like, this is, it's pretty, these are pretty elaborate.
Yeah.
And they can't just go, okay, let's just do it. Like, they can't talk about it 5 minutes before. They're going to have to practice it and everything and rehearse it.
That's what blows my mind, and just all due respect to hockey player culture, I just can't, I want one of us to go down there and do a story on it and learn more about it, because I can't picture some of these guys going through those discussions and planning out these
routines. Well, what do they see to Nino Niederreiter when he comes there, right?
Yeah.
I know you got traded here. You may think this is stupid, but we're doing it and you're going to do it too. You know, I mean, they've gotten buy-in from everybody.
Yep.
And I think a big part of that is because Justin Williams is such a, you know, he's such a forceful kind of leader that way.
Yeah.
So they've managed to get buy-in from everybody.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like I said, really, it's like, boy, if you know, I mean, I can be as curmudgeonly as the next guy. As
no.
You guys know. Yeah,
No.
Okay, we can stop any time now. But I mean, how curmudgeonly can you be for this to get up your keister? You know, like it's really
it's
not
the,
a,
you know, the Canadian way. It's it's crazy.
And they're not, well, they might be a playoff team, but they're probably not.
They're in the hunt.
Yeah.
Everyone's in the hunt these days.
Yeah.
Speaking of in the hunt, another transition for y'all. Columbus, we know Columbus is still in the hunt, which all year has made their dilemma with Panarin and Bobrovsky difficult. But it seems things have gotten even more complicated now that Dan Milstein last week says officially we are not talking contract with Panarin. So we know that we know there's no deal happening, and it almost seals Panarin's fate as a Blue Jacket. Very close.
Yeah,
right?
I wasn't surprised to hear that at all. Like, I just assumed at the beginning of the season
really,
it wasn't going to happen at all.
But
yeah.
I think it's more the public announcement. To me,
the public announcement
is almost like a, hey, offer's welcome. That's what I interpreted it as. So what I'm wondering now is, if you're Jaromír Kekäläinen, and do you do it? Is there any trade that you can conceive of that would work, that would help Columbus stay competitive now? Because they have a chance this year. They have a good team.
Yeah, they're in the second wild card spot.
But still,
as we speak right now.
Right. But I mean,
yeah, they're dropping like a rock. Like Tortorella called them out last week. They suck. They're this.
And maybe it's a distraction,
you know,
right? That's another point
sure
to consider, right?
Yeah. Well, Bobrovsky hasn't looked the same this year. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
Do you guys think will Panarin get traded by February 25th? Straight up.
I don't know if he will, but I have a scenario that I think is kind of interesting because obviously whoever gets him is going to want to get a deal done. He's not going to be I don't think he's going to be a rental.
He's not going to talk deal. He's not going to talk deal with anybody.
Okay, but you have to take that chance, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And Columbus is going to say, like, we're not taking a rental return. Like, we're not going to give him to you for a fourth and a second.
Right.
What about Boston?
Yes, I've written them down too. So,
there you go.
Let's
Boston has
this.
They've got, and I mean, maybe there's a veteran involved to make the dollars work. I'm not sure about the cap situation, but Boston has the prospects and the picks to get it done. So you can go some combination of Ryan Donato, Trent Frederick, Jacob Forsbacka Carlson. You got a first this year, you got a first next year, you got a second this year, you got a second next year, whatever combination of that plus, as I said, some sort of veteran ballast. And Boston's a big city. It's by the water, if we're to believe those are things that matter for Panarin. And the Bruins are good, right? I mean, you think about, like, the California teams. Two of them are awful, and the other one just doesn't have the space for Panarin in San Jose. You know,
if they clear out bodies, they do.
I guess if they clear out bodies.
But I think it's
like,
more...
I personally think San Jose is going to be a front runner for this guy.
I think they want him. So yeah. I have a couple of thoughts, and they kind of tie together. Okay, so Doug Wilson told me this before the season started, that he feels like the reason why he traded for Carlson was he owes it to his veterans to try and help them win the cup every year. So it is
right.
The type of trade he's willing to make. But at the same time, I think Columbus does want an NHL-ready body coming the other way. And I don't think San Jose has the right guy in the right tier, because it would have to be like a Thomas Hertl or a Timo Meier, which I don't think is worth them trading. Whereas Boston, I think you can include a Jake DeBrusk. And Nashville's the other team I'd be looking at that maybe would have to include a Kevin Fiala. And I think those are two players.
Oh, boy, wow.
But they're both in the tier.
So San Jose's not going to trade a Thomas Hertl, but Nashville's
going
to trade a Kevin
Fiala? I think
Hertl's
more established.
I think, Hertl has done more than...
Yeah.
Fiala's got a lot of top-end talent.
Well,
I want to finish my point.
The pointy heads love Fiala. Like the
right, of course
guys,
they
love Fiala. Because,
but the point I want to make is Boston and Nashville are two teams, but they're two teams that are very all in and also have a team that they need to overcome. Nashville needs the star power to be able to beat Winnipeg, so it's probably worth going all in, sacrificing a Fiala to get a Panarin. And Boston, to be able to get past Toronto or Tampa Bay, they don't have the firepower,
right.
Secondary scoring.
Yeah.
So to me, those are the two teams to watch closely. San Jose, I think, has the desire, absolutely, to go to Panarin, but I don't know if they can create the right package.
I think this is a go-for-it scenario for San Jose, too. Like, I'm just... And I'm not doing anything but reading tea leaves here, but I just don't get the sense Eric Carlson's going to re-sign with San Jose. I just get that sense.
The
and
time
I,
is not now.
It's not
I kind of feel that, too, and I don't...
His body language last week, and when you asked about it, he was very like, yeah, I love it here, but, I'm glad they're respecting my right to kind of think this over. I just, like I said, based on nothing, in fact, just on looking at tea leaves, I just get the sense that he might not be back there next year. So then this does become a let's go for broke here.
Panarin for Carlson trade.
But it's,
who says no?
I agree. It doesn't seem like a love fest. Like, I haven't been reading stories about either Carlson gushing about San Jose or the players gushing about him. They seem happy, but... I feel like if it was a foregone conclusion he was coming back, we'd be hearing a lot more love.
Yeah.
That's what I agree. Tea leaves. It's not. There's no proof of this, but it's just a feeling. I share that.
So then, does it become a situation where San Jose is like Pittsburgh? It's like, yeah, we know that. Like, I mean, every team goes into the playoffs. Like, nobody should win. Almost, you know what I mean? Like, every team goes into the playoffs saying the odds are stacked against us. I mean, President's Trophy teams. Have won 25% of the Stanley Cups. Like, that's still a pretty good odd.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably better odds than anybody else has, but the odds are always stacked against you going into the playoffs. You've got to have everything fall in the right place in order to win the Stanley Cup.
Mm.
So, you know, why not? Like, why not go for it if you're San Jose? I mean, I could see them winning the cup.
But can they?
I can absolutely.
Can they put the do they have the right package? I definitely
right.
think
yeah.
San Jose wants to do it.
Right.
But I just... Because I was writing an article on Panarin suitors last week, so I went through all the teams, and Boston and Nashville were two of the most likely. But I did have San Jose on the list, because I feel like there's a desire there. But I'm just not convinced they can get the right combination of guys to give Columbus, because of the fact that Columbus is not behaving like a seller team. They want guys that can help them now as well.
Well, if it's picks, they don't have it. Because they don't have a first round pick forever.
Yeah, that's
so,
right. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah, so if picks are involved... If draft picks are involved, they're probably not going to be able to do it. If their prospect pool is really good, Ryan Kennedy, guy.
Ryan Merkley.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, they already kind of like, I mean, they already shipped out prospects. Like,
okay.
Like Josh Norris.
So then you are looking at roster players. You're definitely looking at roster players.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, is it a Thomas Hertl? Is it a Jonas Donskoy? Is it a Timo Meyer? Is it, you know,
and to make it worth it for
know.
Panarin,
yeah,
it's got to
yeah.
be somebody...
Yeah. Yep.
Maybe a couple of them.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a tough scenario. We'll see. If I have to bet right now, I say that Columbus keeps Panarin through the deadline. But
I bet no. I think they're going to get rid of him.
Okay.
Right. I don't think they can justify to their fan base that they'll have nothing to show for this guy after the season.
What's the bet?
Well, I thought it was a metaphorical bet.
I guess so.
Okay, what do you want to bet? What do you want to bet? Swap paychecks? No, that's not good.
Nope. We'll think about it. There's been talk, TSN's Darren Dreger was reporting it last week, that there are executives around the league that are basically saying that they are preparing offer sheets for Mitch Marner in Toronto if he gets past that window. So it would be June 25th, or the first Monday after the draft. That's when teams can negotiate with them if there's no qualifying offer. So I'm curious what you guys think. I wrote about it last week. I crunched the numbers, and I don't think people understand how complicated it actually is to make an offer sheet to a player and not hit that four draft pick compensation threshold. Because if you're making an offer, so Marner, we know that Mitch Marner is a guy who's going to probably want a long-term deal, 7 years. But if you offer sheet somebody for 7 years, the total average annual value of the contract, or total value of the contract, is divided by five, not by seven. So the cap hit, for the sake of draft pick compensation, is higher than the actual contract.
It's four, right? It's four first rounders.
Right.
Starting in 2020, not starting in 2019.
Right. Exactly.
So I would think there's a lot of teams, like there's a couple of teams.
I don't think there is.
They don't have it. I just went through them, and I think there's a fair number of teams that have their first round picks.
I think so, yes. But to me, I just don't see a scenario in which a team is going to be willing to offer sheet Marner and give up 4 years of first round picks. Not in this young man's league. I also say that anyone who's leaking the idea that they're doing it, I also don't buy that they're leaking it because they plan to actually do it. I think they're just trying to drive up the Leafs' price. So in summary, I think it's all BS. I think that offer sheets are the Loch Ness Monster. We have not seen one in 6 years, and they're always short-term deals because of that compensation thing when it's an offer of 5 years or longer. All BS. I don't believe it. I do not believe that we will see an offer sheet for Marner.
Well, I don't think we're going to see an offer sheet for Marner because the deal's probably going to get done before July 1st.
Yeah, I think
I think that's why we're not going to see an offer sheet for Marner. But are you telling me that if Mitch Marner went on the trade, if for whatever reason Kyle Dubas got up tonight and had a press conference and said, we're going to trade Mitch Marner, you don't think there would be teams that would be willing to offer four first-round picks for Mitch Marner?
No. Four first-round picks?
Yeah, in a trade. Four nope. first-round picks.
No, you I can tell you one team that would do it. Edmonton
Oilers.
Imagine Marner and McDavid.
Four first-round picks?
You have two players. You don't have a first-round pick for 4 years.
Big deal. Who cares?
I don't buy it. I don't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't buy you. I don't believe you. I'm not buying what you're selling, Matt.
In this, a team can turn around so quickly with their first-round picks in this day and age that it's so much more of a young man's game than it ever was. Look what the Leafs have done with four first-round picks. Look at their four
We're not talking about teams that have picks in the top three or top four.
Doesn't matter.
But if you're a contending team and you're going to be picking 20th, 21st, 25th, and 28th in those 4 years, who gives a
darn? There's so much parity in the league that you don't know where you're going to be in 3 or 4 years.
Right.
You might be picking last. Right? You could get a team like Chicago. They won the division in 2017. They were last place the next year.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't buy it. BS.
I do. I think maybe it's not going to be Marner. But I'm telling you one thing, and I'm going to the bank with this. If Braden Point is a restricted free agent on July 1st, there are going to be offer sheets.
I don't think there are going to
be offer sheets for Braden Point because, one, he's a stud. Number two, at the very least, you put Tampa in a terrible situation.
Yeah.
Terrible situation if they have to
match. But you put yourself in a terrible situation. You lose four first-round picks.
Who cares?
Everybody.
You're getting Brandon Point. You're getting one of the best players in the league.
Then your team's top-heavy. In a couple of years, your fan base turns on you because you gutted your future. I don't think it's worth it. I don't think it's going to happen.
Well, you're going against Darren Dreger, you're going against Ken Campbell, and you're going against Ryan Kelly.
I am.
Well, I'm going to take the middle
road. So we know that you're wrong.
I'm going to take the middle road and say that the Marner talk is just a smokescreen. I don't think there's any validity to the report. But I do think that a team could do it. I agree with you that I think he's going to be signed way before that deadline.
All I know, well, I don't know this, but I'm going to speculate this, that if Zach Werenski, Sebastian Aho, Braden Point, Patrick Laine, Mitch Marner, if they're all free agents on July 1st and there are no offer sheets, if I'm the NHLPA, the first thing I'm doing is filing a grievance for collusion.
Call Robert Mueller.
Call what?
Robert Mueller.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I, because to me, like, how could those players of that ilk be out there and all you have to give up is draft picks for them and you're not going
to
do it?
All you have to give up is four first round picks.
Yeah. And yeah, that's all. That's all.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
The scenario that in which I would agree with you about the possibility is somebody offers Sheeting like Kasperi Kapanen, because you might be able to offer Sheeting for just a couple years, kind of like what Calgary did with Ryan O'Reilly 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's a scenario I could see happening because you're in a much smaller, much lower compensation threshold. That I can totally see happening. But a guy like Marner, who's going to be seeking, I think, max term, if at all possible.
Who knows?
Or even, I mean, but even
Austin
6 years.
Austin Matthews isn't seeking
right.
max
but term. Even if you're more than five, even if it's 6 years, then it's going to put you in that compensation bind. So I think it's more likely that a good but not elite RFA gets the offer sheet.
Mm.
Okay.
My two cents, bros.
Yeah, well, you're wrong.
I'm right. I'm right. But let me know. Let me know when the offer sheet comes.
No,
yeah.
I don't think
so. I'll put my tail between my legs, but just let me know. Maybe it'll be 2039, but just, you know, it's been 6 years already. Time for some fantasy insider picks. The first couple are pretty straightforward. This point in the year, it's harder to find upside because a lot of the breakouts have already happened. So you're looking for trades, and when trades happen, it changes player situations, of course. So you have Derek Brassard, who immediately gets dropped onto the right wing on a line with Vincent Trocheck and Mike Hoffman in Florida. That's a fantasy-friendly situation for him. Suddenly, he's getting more ice time. He already gets a point in his first game. Very logical guy to grab. Nick Bjugstad, we'll see, because like you said, Ryan, Malkin wasn't in that first game, but Bjugstad played with Phil Kessel, and I think there's still a pretty good chance in Pittsburgh, the way they run their lines, you're going to have good line mates in some scenarios. So if you're in a deep league, I don't know if Bjugstad is going to be the type that's going to get power play time, unless they want to use his big body for net front. But at least even strength, he's going to have good line mates. And the last one is Jack Roslovic. And this one's a bit complicated, okay? So player of the week has a hat trick. That makes it seem like he's an obvious pickup. He's getting power play time. When he had that hat trick, I think he had 3 power play points in that game. Only owned in 4% of leagues, which is crazy. But you have to look closer. The ice time is not being huge for him. And Nikolaj Ehlers, when he's in the lineup, it's somebody, a good forward, is going to have to get pushed down to the third line. So what you hope is that Roslovic gets a shot to be the number 2 center. Right now he's playing on the wing on a line with Little and Laine. But either way, if you're in a deep league, he's a guy that you want to grab just to find out, because we know the talent's there. He's extremely fast. He's a great prospect, former first-round pick. And he has the pedigree that if he continues to show something, he's going to get more leash from Paul Maurice, because he's expected. He was one of the top breakup picks, at least for me, going into the year. But at the same time, you can keep the leash on your fantasy team relatively short, because it's still possible he gets demoted and maybe he's on a bit of a lucky streak. The ice time has not been great, so we'll see about that. Let's turn it over to Ryan for Future Watch and some prospect talk.
Okay, so we'll start off with the 2019 draft. Alex Newhook of the Victoria Grizzlies, playing in the BCHL, that is Junior A hockey, 81 points in 46 games. That is the best in the league. Newhook is a Boston College commit, originally from Newfoundland, and just a dynamic young player. Not a huge frame, but I love the pace that he plays with. I almost see him as like Robbie Fabbri, maybe even better than Robbie Fabbri. Obviously Fabry's had some injuries and things like that, but I like the upside with Newhook. It'll be interesting to see where he goes in the draft, because there is a lot of talent up top in this round. But he's been very good out west, played at the World Junior A Challenge, played at the CJHL Top Prospects game. So he hits all those marks. And the Victoria Grizzlies, they have actually a couple of guys up for the draft this year, so they're a fun team to watch. Now, moving over to drafted prospects, got to do a shout-out to the Arizona State Sun Devils, an independent team, number 8 in the pairwise rankings for the NCAA. Basically meaning they have 4 games left, and they are pretty close to a lock to make the Frozen Four Field of 16.
That's awesome.
Incredible for
wow,
a program
yeah,
that's
cool.
Only a couple of years old. Joey DeCord.
Mary Lemieux's kid plays for them, too.
There you go. Joey DeCord is their starting goaltender. He's an Ottawa Senators pick. First time I saw him was back, actually, when he played at Cushing Academy, the prep school out east. Big kid. And very talented. He's got a .931 save percentage this year. Obviously, much better than his previous couple of years when Arizona State was just kind of getting things together. He was always very busy for them. And he was one of my players to watch this year coming into the NCAA campaign, because, I wondered, how good could he be for them? Turns out that they actually do have some scoring support, but he has also been excellent for them. So Joey Decord gets the nod. One of two drafted players on the Sun Devils, along with Calgary Flames pick, Dimitrios Kuzmatis.
All right. Excellent. We're going to switch over to the magazine right now. Currently on newsstands, it's the rookie issue. Elias Pettersson, Elias Pettersson, whatever you want to call him.
Petey.
He's on the cover right now. And Ken, you had a chance to catch up with him and wrote a story that's getting a lot of awesome feedback I've seen on social media and stuff. So tell us a little bit about what you learned from Mr. Pettersson.
Well, I think the thing that is most mind-blowing about Elias Pettersson is the fact that in this day and age, we're in 2019, and every kid who comes up to the NHL has a skills coach, an off-ice coach, a diet coach, a this coach, a that coach. Elias Pettersson had no skill coaching coming up.
Wow.
As a kid in Sweden. Like, you know, like Ferris Bueller, never had a lesson. You know what I mean? But that is amazing. Like, but what he did have were the keys to the arena in his small little wee town of Ange, Sweden. His dad ran the Minor Hockey Association. He was like the president, and he also kind of drove the Zamboni part-time and everything. So he literally had the keys to the arena. So he could go down to the arena anytime he wanted and just go and fart around on his own, play with his buddies, and that's where he developed his skills. When he was in Switzerland, or why do I keep saying Switzerland? There's an under-16 tournament in Sweden. It's called the TV Puck Cup or whatever, and they've been playing it forever, and it's all the best players, under 16 players in Sweden. The year he played was 13-14. There were 561 players in that tournament, under 16. Pettersson was 5'6", 103 pounds. Woo! There were two guys in the whole country who were lighter than he was. Like, he just, you know, the kid was just so small and so skilled, and you know, he's just a guy that, I mean, Inga Hammerström developed a really good relationship with him. He's the Canucks scout in Sweden, and he had known the kid. He had known him through his older brother and stuff like that, and he just, you know, really sort of nurtured the kid and came along. And when it was time for them to pick fifth in 2017. I mean, we all acknowledge that he probably should have gone first in that draft, I would think. I mean, as good as Nico Hischier is, he should have gone ahead of him. He should have gone first. But, you know, I mean, Inga Hammerström was a guy who said, you know, we got to pick this guy. And they went out on a limb, and they picked him at five. And they're reaping the benefits now. Like, this guy is one of the most purely skilled guys in the league, and, you know, a guy who's, you know, I said, do you have a skills coach now? He's like, no. He says, well, the team has one, and I kind of do stuff with him sometimes, but other than that, all on his own.
Crazy. All Elias.
And what we say in the cover summarizes it perfectly, just wow.
Yeah.
And look for it on newsstands right now. Wow, just wow is what it says on the cover. Mm-hmm. Elias Pettersson, story by Ken. Thanks, Kenny. And now it's time for your hot take, so you can just keep on talking. It's a dream come true. Awesome. For Kenny.
Awesome. Nobody in hockey is making a big enough deal out of the New York Islanders. Nobody. Yeah. This story is the biggest story in like a decade, as far as I'm concerned. It's bigger than Vegas last year. It's bigger than Vegas last year. Mm. This is a team. At least Vegas started with players.
It sounds like you're pitching a hotel in Reno right now. It's bigger than Vegas. I tell you, come on. It's the tops.
Vegas at least had players. These guys were supposed to tank. Like, they were the worst defensive team in the NHL this year.
Last year.
And now they're the best.
Guess who the best defensive team in the NHL is? The new freaking New York Islanders. What other team loses their best player, their franchise player, and comes back and does this? This is incredible. This is the biggest story in hockey in a decade, and nobody's paying enough attention to it.
I think that's fair. It's just crazy. You've had a pretty good season, I think, for kind of hot takes that we kind of agree with, mm-hmm. which is pretty crazy. But I don't know. It's a hot take in that I like the angle of bigger than Vegas. I wouldn't say bigger than Vegas because of the improbability of, you know, any expansion team. And we say they had players, but no one said they had players the day of the expansion draft. Everyone, I was like, oh, I know what the plan is here. I was at the expansion draft, and I was like, it's pretty clear Vegas is tanking. And they made the Stanley Cup final. So I don't think it's bigger than Vegas, but I agree. It's the biggest story of this season.
Yeah, I think it's bigger than Vegas myself. Mm-hmm. Because I think we all thought the Islanders would have like 40 points right now. Yeah. And they have 66.
Is there any chance that Barry Trotz doesn't win Coach of the Year and that Robin Leonard doesn't win the Masterton Trophy?
No.
It seems like they're almost locked, right?
No.
Now,
what I think is going to be so interesting, too, is what if the Islanders go on a wicked playoff run here and they make the Stanley Cup Final? Ooh. And they're playing in a building that has 13,000 seats. That's great. Maybe they could just say, hey, Rangers,
yeah,
you're not using your arena right now.
Yeah.
Can we use Madison Square Garden for the Stanley Cup Final?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Imagine an Islanders-Leafs conference final. That'd be a pretty great storyline.
Yep.
Like, unlikely, but it'd be pretty crazy. Yeah.
Does they have to put barbed wire
Matt Barzell
on
would get a hat trick every game.
Yeah, yeah, they'd have to put barbed wire over the glass to make sure none of the Islanders fans jumped on the ice.
Yeah, I think so. Does Barry Trotz win Coach of the Year if the Islanders miss the playoffs? I don't think they're going to miss this part.
I think that's a moot point because they're in. They're in. They're like 7 points up right now.
Yeah, they're pretty good shape. Yeah,
I think at this point he still wins it just because going from last to even ninth in the conference is pretty shocking.
Like
I think even more impressive, going from being the worst defensive team in the NHL to the best defensive
with
team
pretty
in the
minor
NHL.
Personnel changes.
Yeah.
Other than losses.
Other than losing.
And also lost Calvin DeHaan as well from the defense corps.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. Unbelievable story. Time for some mailbag questions. The first one is from Kyle at Boring Name 11. It's okay, Kyle. You're too hard on yourself, pal. Kyle says, why do teams wait until the trade deadline when their needs are glaringly obvious? I'd pay a little extra to have a guy move and play a month and early. Well, Kyle, one thing I'll say, first of all, we are seeing a few teams make moves. I mean, the Leafs made their Muzzin move. Pittsburgh did make a trade as well, or they made two trades already. I don't think it's a matter of the buyer team taking its time. It's a matter of the seller team holding a bidding war and wanting to get as many offers as they can. Because if you're a seller team, there's not that much urgency, really.
Yeah.
You can take your time and let offers trickle in and then make your decision. Like, let's say if you're the Ottawa Senators and you're thinking of trading Matt Duchene, assuming you're not going to re-sign him, you may as well wait till teams get more desperate. And same with the Rangers with Kevin Hayes, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I think, with the parity that exists in the league, you don't know if you're a buyer or seller until a week before the trade deadline. Even at the trade deadline, you're not even sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it, too, is just, you know, there's nothing that creates action like the pressure of a deadline. Right? And you see it all the time. Like, you know, I mean, the NHL and the NHLPA are talking now and it's all well and good and everything. But I'm telling you right now, if they get a deal, it's going to come down to the last minute. It's not, you know, I mean, look at William Nylander this year. Had 2 months to sign a deal. Came down to the last minute. There's that pressure of the deadline that I think spurs a lot of teams into action. And that's part of it there, too.
Yeah. One other thing that I would note is that as you get closer to the deadline, it gets easier to make trades from a salary cap perspective because everything is prorated. So the longer you wait, the more cap space
exactly,
you technically
too,
have.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, so
too, yeah.
You can deal for guys with bigger contracts. Now, the only caveat here is if you're a seller and you wait too long, dudes can get injured. And then you can't trade him at all because they're out for the season.
Or teams check off all their boxes and it's like, yeah, we wanted him, but we got the guys we wanted now, so see you later.
We already have a Mike Green type.
Sorry, Mike Green. That's right. Yeah, it is a delicate balance of knowing when, how long to wait, but then not waiting too long. Yeah. That's true. Next question. Appropriate name is Mark Sad. And Mark Sad says, why are the Oilers so bad? Too much pressure? Poor Mark Sad.
No, there's not too much. It's not because of too much. It's definitely not because of too much pressure. No.
You don't think it's pressure cooker media market? Because there's no other... Like, it's not like there's
New York's a big pressure cooker, and the New York Yankees win all the time.
Well,
Manchester United...
salary cap. No, same. Don't use examples of teams without salary caps.
It doesn't matter.
New England Patriots.
It doesn't matter. It's all within the confines It's all within the confines of the league in which you play.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not because it's too much pressure. It's never because it's too much pressure. It's always starts at the top. Good and bad, it starts with the owner and the management. And if you don't have solid ownership and solid management in place, you're not going to do well. If you do, you're going to do well regardless of the market you're in, regardless of the pressure, regardless of whether or not people care about you or anything. It happens every single time. And the Oilers are bad because they've been horribly mismanaged for the last 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that simple.
Yeah, they've forced players who are too young and too much responsibility too early. They've overpaid players whose contributions are marginal.
Yeah.
The list goes on.
Yeah,
I agree with that.
And I mean, you talk about pressure. It's like a lot of Edmonton media defends the Oilers at no matter what they do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't think, other than the fans themselves, I don't think they're really under that much of a heat lamp. If anything, they're bad because they can't skate.
Yeah.
Other than number 97.
That's right. And a guy, another guy, Kyler Yamamoto, who can skate, should probably be skating on another team at a lower level. But yeah. He's being forced to.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I overall agree. The only thing I'd say is that for whatever reason, I do think, especially when you hear from players who have left Edmonton, it does have a pretty bad reputation in terms of the relationship of players with media, right? My theory is that Edmonton is a more isolated market geographically, so they're I mean, you have the Eskimos, other than if you're a CFL fan. But
there's a lot of them in Edmonton.
Yes, I know. Right? I know. Yeah. I'm just ripping on the CFL because I like to rip on the CFL.
Yeah, well, that was such a great Super Bowl yesterday. You know, so the Grey Cup sucks, and that was like an amazing Super Bowl yesterday. Just amazing. Like the best friggin'
you know what? I'll give you that
football acumen like we've ever seen.
I picked a bad time to rip on the CFL, given that Super Bowl just happened. Fair enough. But my theory just being that maybe because there's that isolation, there's just when the CFL season's done, there's just the Oilers. Whereas, like you said, New England, Ryan, but there's also the Celtics, there's the Bruins. There's more just sports saturation in that market.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
In the winter in Edmonton, like it's the Oilers. That's all there is, right? Just from a pro sports perspective.
Yeah.
Next question is from Beth Demo, and Beth says, Do the weeks off for teams affect their first game back? She's referring to bye weeks. It seems like most players go on vacation. Does the break really help? It is a fair point. A lot of players do seem to take vacations, whether it's with family or kind of bro trips with their teammates. And you do seem to see some kind of lead legs in the first games back.
Yeah.
And I always figured that that's the trade-off you get. You do rest some injuries.
Yeah.
You rest your brain.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't know if teams can do much about that. You're just going to have rest if you've been away for a week, but what do you guys think?
Well, the good thing about it is now everybody's rusty at the same time, basically,
true.
Right? You know, so you're not coming off a bye week and the other team is like in the middle of a 15-game homestand or something like that, you know what I mean? Like, everybody's taking the week off before or after the All-Star break, so everybody sucks when they come back. Like, I was in Detroit Friday night and Toronto looked... The Maple Leafs looked just god-awful for a period and a half. It was like... Wow, this bye week really hurts, and it also hurts that the game didn't start till late 30 because they had the Red Kelly number retirement. But it was just—I
didn't know you went to Detroit.
I did.
What were you doing?
I went for Red Kelly's retirement.
Oh, nice, cool
number retirement.
I don't know how I didn't know that, but you know.
Well, what do I have to tell you? Okay, I'll give you my agenda for next week.
I appreciate
that. So
that
you know everything I'm doing. Okay,
that's what I'd like.
It's mostly naps.
Naps and crossword puzzles.
Yeah.
We'll just fill in the rest. Anyways, but yeah, no, I think it really does affect teams in the short term, only in the short term. Like, they might look like crap for half a game or two periods, but then it sort of all kicks back in. I think it's, you know, I mean, I hate the whole bye thing because, you know, the NHL sits there and tells us, oh, we can't shut our league down for 2 weeks to go to the Olympics. And then they have a two-week period where they have, like, a total of... 7 games, you know, like coming out of the freaking All-Star break.
Yeah.
2 games one night, 3 games one night, 2 games one night. There were like 8 games in the first 3 or 4 days after the All-Star break. So anyways, I hate the whole thing because they don't go to the Olympics and they're just a bunch of duplicitous.
We'll stop you there, Ken. We'll stop you there.
But anyways, yeah. No, I think for the players, I'm sure it's great. I'm sure it's great for the players because... They get to recharge the batteries. They come back a little rusty for a couple of periods, and then they're fine.
Yeah, I agree. It's short-term pain for long-term gain, and then you get back to it. I mean, the schedule does get a little bit busier. I think you get a little more back-to-backs because of the bye week.
Yeah, it gets compressed, yeah.
But when you need points and you're running on adrenaline, it's not the worst
thing. Tell you, boys, I play beer league hockey every Thursday night, and every Thursday night when I step on the ice, I'm ready to go. I'm freaking ready to go, and I have a whole week off, and I'm just freaking ready to go. I got it going.
I'm the worst
player.
Oh,
I'm the worst player on the ice. Worst player on the ice.
I remember this is kind of sad. It was a bye week, and I was asking Corey Crawford what his plans were, and he was like, and I was like, oh, where are you? And he's like, oh, I'm doing something with my family. I was like, where are you going? He was like, huh, no, nice try. I'm not telling you. And I was like, dude, it's all right. Like, I wasn't. Trying to trick you into telling me where you were going. I was just making conversation.
Like you were going
to like,
show up.
I was like, man, how jaded can you be? Like, he really felt like I was trying to, like, broadcast where he was going.
Probably took his family to Disney World and he, like, wore one of the mascot costumes so nobody would see who
I guess. I don't know.
Branson,
yeah.
Missouri.
But he said, like, it seems so jaded. I was like, man, you got to trust a little more, Corey. I felt bad for him
yeah.
in that moment.
Well, I feel bad for him now because he's playing for Chicago.
But. Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to end on that low note this week. Hope you enjoyed it. Now I got to clean up the Coke that Ken spilled on me.
Diet Coke.
And we'll be back next week. Thanks for listening, everybody.